In the beginning, there was a creation of a small plastic case. In this case, there was an item called a DVD. When the DVD was placed inside the machine, the first movie was being watched. This allowed the Extra Features podcast to begin.
All right. We've just returned from the Secret Wars. It's time for episode 252 of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. I'm Kevin.
I think I'm still Simon, but I think I'm starting to lose it after watching some of this bad VOD crap that's coming out lately.
I'm Daniel, and I no longer look like a caveman.
And I'm upset by it.
I'm Doug, and I'm American.
So, Doug, being American, are you mailing in your ballot this coming November?
Of course.
Can you send it up to me so I can vote Republican for you?
Did you get a special ballot in the mail from President Trump telling him you have to vote to support him?
Not yet. That should be coming soon, though.
Well, he's railing about mail-in ballots. The campaign is actually sending them to people, telling them they have to.
With his pink envelope, it's insane.
Yes. Yeah.
He said if he loses, it's rigged.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yes, because he's rigged it enough that he should win, that I guess if he doesn't, then he thinks something's fixed.
So, good news for us Canadians, guys. Movie theaters opened. They've been open for 4 or 5 days now.
So how many movies have you gone to see?
Zero.
Are you going to?
Yeah, I think I'll leave the house for Tenet.
I might go to Unhinged this week.
I'm definitely going for Tenet, and I'll probably go for New Mutants.
So, yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those things we'll have to see. I have to see how comfortable I am when I go see. I have to pick my first one wisely.
I'm hearing the attendance is low, so you probably do all right.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I was getting a little bit of a groundhog feeling to watching, waiting patiently for something to come out on streaming.
Are you sure that wasn't Palm Springs?
It was Palm Springs. Very good guess, Kevin. Palm Springs is our first film. Hit it, then.
Starring Andy Samberg, Kristen Milioti, J.K. Simmons, Meredith Hagner, Camila Mendez, Tyler Hoechlin, June Squibb, and Gail Dickey.
Who? Jill Dickey?
Gail Dickey.
Who's that?
The one from the bar that Andy Samberg hooks up with.
Oh.
Bartender, the blonde-haired.
Yeah, the older-looking woman.
Yes, yeah, she was good. So, I'm going to start with Palm Springs. It's my list this week. So, if anyone has any issues, it's extrafeatures@gmail.com. Nope, .ca. Attention, Daniel Print. So, if I got that, any issues, just send all the mail to Print.
Okay.
So, I like Groundhog Day movies usually. It's one of my favorite things. I think it's fun. I like to see what they do. They usually are terrible. But surprisingly, this one isn't. I laughed. I thought it was fun. I thought the supporting characters worked. I like the concept. I like it actually had a fun at the end. I thought it didn't take itself too seriously, but it worked towards the end. It was building and tried different things and worked on things, had an actual storyline, which was nice to see. And Adam Sandberg should be a star, but he keeps getting screwed over consistently. Drives me nuts. I mean, pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping was phenomenal. Great songs. Didn't do it. This got screwed because it was supposed to get a theatrical release. The pandemic hits, it gets dumped on VOD. So I'm giving this film a full thumbs up right now. I love everybody in it. I think Kristen Milioti should have been the star of the film, not Adam Sandberg, because she does all the heavy lifting and does a great job.
Guys? Andy Sandberg, though. Yeah, I love this one. I think he gets respect for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I thought their chemistry was great. Kristen Milioti from How I Met Your Mother. I don't know if she's but yeah, it's a Groundhog Day film. Every day feels new. And that's what I loved about it. Can't remember the last time I belly laughed like this. And especially with J.K. Simmons as the sadistic guy that he ropes into the time loop. And I didn't even realize this was a time loop film. So when it was like 10 minutes in, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. So, you know, I loved it. It was a big surprise. I've been hearing good things about it, but I was surprised how much I liked it. That's it.
Yeah. I think it was pretty fantastic. I like that at the end it wasn't the power of love or becoming a good person that saved the day. It was studying science for years upon years. And that's what gets them through in the end. I thought it was fantastic.
You know what? I think we're all in agreement on this one. I really enjoyed this movie. Andy Samberg, I mean, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he's done movies. I think he's a face. I think he's going to end up being like a Adam Sandler type of character actor that does comedies that either watch or don't. I had a hard time finding this film because it's not VOD. It's available only on Hulu. It's a Hulu exclusive in the States. So it's not available outside of the United States. So I had some interesting challenges ahead finding that copy. But no, I loved it. I thought it was very smart, very well written. You get the sense that when we enter the picture through the eyes of the sister of the bride, Adam has probably gone through like a zillion iterations of the same day. So he's, you know, and we find out that, you know, he's had sex with just about everybody and, you know, who knows what. Every time he's, you know, perfected his speeches and just keeps running through the same day. But, no, I mean, it's you make what you can of a bad situation. And I think all of them grew to the task, right? And in the case of J.K. Simmons, he learns to love his family and appreciate the day over and over again. You know, and the sister of the bride learns to study science to escape the loop. And, you know, Niles just has fun and goes and drinks a lot.
Did everybody stay for the stinger at the end?
No.
The Roy scene?
No, end scene when they're in the pool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, stayed for that. Then you stayed for the Roy scene after that?
I think the Roy scene preceded the pool.
Yeah.
Wait, there was another pool scene after them coming home?
Them coming home was the conclusion.
That was the conclusion.
Okay.
To show that they moved it to the next day. They moved into the next day.
Yeah, so I missed the stinger then. Okay.
Isn't the stinger Roy meeting him at the wedding?
Yeah, well, what stinger are you talking about?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you guys all see it. So people know, see the stage for the credits. There's more to the story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, I would love a sequel to this film. I could totally handle one. I don't know how they would figure it out. But I enjoyed the cast. I want to say we can drop Veronica. She annoys the hell out of me normally.
Who?
Well, you could do a prequel. I read that Niles was in the time loop for 40 years before finding him. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of material there. I thought it was just interesting how, like, she's a new perspective and she's learning the day as we are getting used to it too. And I thought that was the dynamic that was most interesting to me.
I thought it was, well, we need somebody. Like, whenever you show these Groundhog Days, you need somebody to explain it to the viewer. I mean,
yeah.
Daniel, I don't mean to be rude. Me, you, and Kevin all get stuck in the time loop together, and you've already been here for 40 years. You might want to tell us what you've tried to get out of it.
How is that rude? What do you mean?
No, I want you to tell us. I mean, for the listener, the viewer, like, I'm coming into a time loop. I need somebody to tell me. It'd probably be Gavin normal.
No, I just mean it's an interesting dynamic that she explores everything. And just
I think it's great. I think it fills in. I think you leave this film fulfilled.
Yeah.
Which I find a lot of comedies have issues fulfilling that for me. That they just go in one direction and drop storylines or don't finish storylines. But I feel here everybody pretty much had something to do, which I like to see in the film. I like my characters to have depth. Okay, moving along.
Time portal was radioactive.
Sure, I can barely hear you, but go ahead.
I said, do you think that time portal is active?
It, more than possibly, yes.
That was my transition. Starring Rosamund Pike, Sam Riley, Anurin Bernard, and Anya Taylor-Joy.
So, again, I guess I'll start since it's my list. I'm not going to start. I'm not starting the next one. Kevin is. I thought this was just a general biography. I thought it might have a little more interest. I thought she was an interesting person, but she didn't seem to really do more than science the whole time. I mean, I wanted to maybe know a little bit more about her kids near the end or a little bit more about her family, but that doesn't seem to ever be addressed. Maybe it's because it's uninteresting until the very end when she goes out in, I think it's World War One. If I haven't went with the X-ray machine and does that, I thought that was very interesting that I knew nothing about this from this lady. I mean, she does discuss how she won 2 Nobel Prizes and she doesn't care and this and that. I think she's very, very smart. And I do have one small issue. I mean, obviously stuff is written about her, but I don't know if she wrote anything herself personally other than her papers and scientific research. When she gets mad at her husband in this film is my issue and blames him saying, you took all the credit. I never felt that at all. I thought he supported her the whole way and gave her full credit on all the papers.
Yeah, I think she's just, did take credit for the Nobel Prize. Maybe didn't talk about her in her speech. I don't know.
Well, I think her problem was she wasn't allowed to be there. She was home with the kids, and she wasn't permitted to go and accept the award with her husband. So I think that's where that frustration came from. Mm. And it's not like she stopped loving her husband. She just had a moment of frustration.
But my question is, did that really happen, or they just wrote that in?
Creative liberties? I don't know.
I did read that there were some complaints against this film about taking liberties with truth.
Okay.
And actual facts, yeah.
Do you know if some of them were?
So I don't know what's true and what's not. I have to read an actual biography.
Well, I don't think there was much information on this lady. I mean, obviously somebody was thought she had an, I think she's a bright lady and did a lot for science. But I don't know if she's really interesting outside of that. And did we really need an hour and 45 minutes on this?
No.
I mean, Anna Taylor-Joy just sort of pops up at one point near the end of the film, like, oh, hi, it's Anna Taylor-Joy. She's got to be here for some reason. Gets her mom, which is whatever her name is, Marie.
Sorry, Curie.
Yeah. Gets her involved in World War One, but I really found this was very procedural, which bugged me because I read this whole article in Rosamund Pike saying, oh, I was worried about doing this film. I didn't want to do a basic biography. I'm like, but you did do a basic biography.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the only thing that's, it's definitely a procedural run-of-the-mill biography, and I think there's a visual flair that kind of makes it stand out a bit, but I didn't feel anything for these characters, and they have her discover radium in the first 40 minutes, and then the husband dies, gets hit by a car. I thought the way they filmed that was funny, to be honest.
Well, he's dying anyway.
She just goes through boring relationships for the last hour, and I didn't really care until any of Taylor-Joy showed up. But her character is boring, too, and then she just kind of left. So I didn't really like this one.
I enjoyed the visual flair. It was the moments where it jumps forward in time to show, you know, the atomic bomb and stuff like that. I felt that was kind of out of place in the story they were telling.
I see.
But it did add visual flair to it, but I'm not sure it was needed.
I like the Chernobyl scene and a bit of the, but the Nagasaki, the Hiroshima one felt weird, and the reenactment of the chemotherapy with the kid getting the big ray gun that after school special, reenacting that.
I did like the atomic bomb testing where you saw the mannequin melting into the hole in the sand. I thought that was cooking.
Kevin, sure.
Much to add. I didn't add my review of Radioactive, which I was bored by. This is my intern review. I put it in, I watched it, and I was bored out of my mind.
Wow.
I thought a lot of the, I didn't think her performance was particularly captivating. I don't know why. I mean, other than the fact that she was an important historical figure, the director of the film is Marjan Satrapi, who is a well-regarded graphic novelist. Persepolis, I think, is her graphic novel. So you think there would be a little bit more visual flair to this. But, I mean, in certain sequence, yes. But for the most part, I found it very bland.
Fair enough. Kevin, you're ready for your new roommate, anyway, Shirley?
And then... No, because she was going crazy. I just couldn't handle the stress of it. She was making things up, eating mushrooms, doing crazy things. I couldn't handle it. There was some weird fertility thing under my bed. I have no idea what that was all about. But no, unfortunately, I did not finish Shirley, so I can't give you a full review other than this is a very strange, well-regarded horror author who is crazy.
Can I hit them with the cast list?
Yes.
Shirley, starring Elizabeth Moss, Odessa Young, Michael Stuhlbarg, Logan Lerman, and directed by Josephine Decker.
I did not care for this movie at all. Maybe it's the way I watched it. I watched it on a handheld device. I watched it on my Kindle. It was just incredibly dark. Even scenes in broad daylight, it just felt dark and repressive. And I guess that's kind of what they were going for. I didn't care for the story at all. As soon as it was over, I had to look up to see if she really was this crazy woman that they portray her as in this movie, her and her husband. And no, they were just run-of-the-mill, eccentric, you know, academics who might be a little bit beyond normal, but not to the extent that they were in this film. So I just don't get why the filmmakers would take a person like Shirley Jackson, who is real, and then make her criminal in what she does in this film.
Hold on.
I didn't get it. That's it.
This is based on a real person?
Yeah, I forgot this is a biography, too. I thought it was a stand-in for Frankenstein author Mary Shelley.
So did I.
I was like, oh,
but it's
Shirley Jackson.
Not a biography, though. It's completely made up. It's a fiction using real people.
Oh, okay. But it has biography on the IMDb page as a genre.
I think
I don't know.
Shirley Jackson and her husband were real people. The book she's writing, Hangisman, is real. It's a book that she wrote. But the students, they're not real. The story about what they did to the students, that's not real.
So a lot of creative liberties with this one. But yeah, I have to echo kind of what you said, Doug. I liked the style of it. I liked the score a lot. I thought that was haunting. I thought Elizabeth Moss was very creepy. And it was I was very surprised to learn it was a biography because it's not run of the mill at all, unlike Radioactive. And I had to look up, when it was over, I had to look up what happened with the psychological terror because I was like, okay. And I didn't really get it by the end of it.
Well, I have to start there. I had a lot of problems with the ending, and I thought the film started off fine. I was fully on board for the first half an hour. And then it just started getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And Elizabeth Moss, I'm like, you're just boring me now. Like, you're not doing anything. I felt like I was watching Palm Springs again, just stuck in the same scene over and over and over again. I'm like, okay, I got it. I got it. We're going to go eat mushrooms. Okay. She doesn't want to leave. And I never thought the mom, the girlfriend or whatever, the wife, should wanting to be there. Like, they kept saying, oh, Shirley needs her. I'm like, does she really? Or Shirley's creator her to need her? I don't think that needed to be worked out. I think that relationship they try to force upon us, and I never felt it was real by what they were doing. And then, as the film's wrapping up, and Shirley's storyline's pretty much done, I think, they drop a bomb on us that her husband's having an adulterous affair, and then she goes to try her killer. I'm like, where is this coming from? What, just this bomb at the end of the film? I'm like, this is a bad payoff. Like, absolute terrible payoff. I'm like, I understood we're doing a one location kind of thing and something happens to Michael Stahlberg, but nope, nothing. They're good. But the other couple, it made no sense to me to go in that direction. You know, I'd rather seen Shirley's book come out and everybody loves it, which they do. I got that part. But the ending of this film, I just felt they didn't know what to do with it. Well, we got to do something with this character. You spend an hour and a half with her, let's do something. Now, I just couldn't buy it. And I couldn't buy her husband doing this either. Because they show how happy they are halfway through the constantly how happy they are. So am I wrong here not buying this ending?
No, I had no idea what was going on. She follows the stand-in for the woman she's writing about, who's also played by Odessa Young.
Yes.
And then she's just standing on the thing. And then when she's in the car, she does a thing with her face. And I'm like, wait, did Shirley possess her somehow? And I was like, I was lost, to be honest.
So it wasn't just, and I thought it was confusing. Shirley was driving because she couldn't leave the house 20 minutes earlier.
Did she fall asleep and dream all this shit?
Well, that's right. I need some help. I was hoping you guys could figure this out for me. But obviously, you guys were just as lost as I was by the end here.
I read the Wikipedia, and I'm still confused.
So the Wikipedia guy has no idea what's going on either.
No, he was just like, oh, they had psychological terror, and then Shirley feels bad about what they, because they psychologically break them down. And then it says Shirley feels bad about what she done, but then she's like, well, shit, let's just dance about it.
Well, I guess the only answer I had with the part in the cliff, I was thinking that she knows she's pregnant and wants to keep the baby. That's why she doesn't kill herself, because she seems to be into that.
Yeah.
But then I thought maybe she was going to drop dead there and Shirley was going to take care of the baby. It's kind of, like I said, there's no real ending to this film. Okay, well, I guess we're just going to, nobody likes my films, I could see, but that's okay. Let's move along to our Netflix film.
If you're busy like me, going to the video store is a hassle. With Netflix, just make a list of the movies you want to see. And in about one business day, you'll get three delivered to your house.
A Kissing Booth 2. Sorry. Joey King, Joel Courtney, Jacob Elordi, Molly Ringwald, Megan Young, Taylor Zikar, Perez, Maisie Richardson, Sellers.
Well, Kevin, since you didn't have a lot to say about Shirley, I'm sure you have something to say about Kissing Booth 2.
How long was this movie? Five hours?
Two hours and 12 minutes.
2 hours, 12, but probably 10.
It felt about 8 or 9. So, a bunch of really entitled, well-off, rich kids in California opine about love. What was the point of this stupid movie? Like, the main character, like, my problem with the last movie was that the main character had a fairy tale love affair with this one brother who didn't like her, and I don't even remember all of the story, but, and his brother was the best friend. Now we're back for more, and the older brother's gone off to Europe, and the girl,
Harvard, yes, he went to Boston.
Felt like Europe. and so, you know, what can I say? That you know, they go to they're very affluent Californians with real first world problems.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, her boyfriend's in Boston. Does that mean they're broken up or not? And if she wants to be, I don't know. She gets upset because she finds an earring. She goes to Boston, finds an earring under his bed, gets all worked up. You know, maybe she should go out with Marco, the hunky Italian video game dance guy. you know, come on. Like, there's nothing about this, like, you know, her best friend is dating her friend, and she's getting upset because her best friend spends all her time, all of his time with her, because they're, like, inseparable. So, you know, why not just say something to somebody about it instead of just, you know, anyway, getting all worked up about things. And you know what? She's the main character is a monster. She just has, she's completely clueless to anybody's emotions except her own. You know, she takes advantage of the one brother, her best friend, and then his girlfriend, who is also her friend, the fact that she's constantly monopolizing his time away from their relationship time. She goes after the hunky Marco guy, but she's not really interested in going out with him. She's just wants to win some dance competition because, so there's no point in even doing the dance competition. I don't know. It just kept going on and on. And then on top of that, they had to tack in the kissing booth stuff just so that we could fit in the title of the movie.
26 minutes left.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, the movie's called Kissing Booth. Yeah. Okay. We'll just run the same thing from last year. We'll grab a couple new people. And, you know, I'm glad that the, you know, in 2020, we're still getting excited about people coming out. I mean, people come out all the time in movies and television. And I'm not sure it's any longer the big epic thing that, like, the one guy who comes out at the kissing booth sequence has to have. So, anyway, I'm rambling. I feel like the intern rambling about this. But, no, I did not care for this. I thought this was a real waste of time. It's basically sold to 14-year-old girls with wish fulfillment fantasies.
You.
And Bob.
And Bob.
And Bob, who gave it a 9 on Facebook. 8
oh, of course
on
he did.
Facebook.
Of course he did. No offense, Bob, but you're a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're outside of that target demographic, it's like, okay, thank you, I hate this. Like you said, I think my biggest pet peeve with romantic comedies and it's when people don't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And Elle is the queen of miscommunication. It's like, oh, I found this earring under my boyfriend's bed. I'm just going to narrate about it and tell you how I feel, but I'm not going to talk to him about mm-hmm. it. And it's like, I don't care about your first world problems. I don't care about you. I don't care about the kissing booth.
I don't know if I'm going to go to Berkeley or Harvard. Oh, man.
And that's my thing. The formula for this film is, okay, let's break a best friend rule so there's conflict later. And why can't you just say, oh, hey, buddy, do you want to apply to Harvard too? And that just solves all of it.
Mm-hmm.
If people talk, this is a 90-minute movie. And instead, it's torture at 2 hours 12. And it's like enough subplots to make a soap opera writer just die.
Three's Company did it much better in 20 minutes.
Did they have a kissing booth episode?
They probably did. Knowing, okay. Showing it, yeah.
Okay. Terrible. I'd rant more, but I'm exhausted already.
This was just a movie where everybody was so self-absorbed. Nobody cared about anybody else. Mm-hmm. The only character I felt any sympathy for was Marco's friend at the very end when he tells her she's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
100% correct, and this movie was not worth it.
And then we had to have 5 minutes of Marco looking sadly going, oh, she so is. So worth it. Come on.
Okay. I have lots to go here. My first thing I want to start off, before I'd already seen the film, Doug, I get a text from Doug. WTF, Kissing Booth 2, 2 hours and 12 minutes? What? I couldn't stop laughing. That was 10 minutes. I like this film more than all you guys, and I only gave it a 4. So I think part of the problem is 3 montages. 3, not 1, but 3 not needed. The earring scene, why do we have this? Like, the British woman's just in just to cause conflict, because everybody has to have a conflict.
Yeah. He just wanted a friend, like she had in his brother.
Yeah.
And he brings her back to California from Boston. You don't do that with a friend.
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh, okay.
It's all first world problems. It's like the mega rich.
I got to give you guys, I liked the dance competition. That's the only part of the, I really enjoyed that part of the film. I thought it was kind of fun. I enjoyed that. I thought
just
it was,
let yourself go, Simon.
I did. I liked that. The kids, and I have to agree with Kevin, the scene with the two gentlemen liking, who cares? Why do we need this? Absolutely pointless. Whenever it was on, they had no character arc, other than you could tell they liked it. Great, go hang out. I don't care.
There was a point where the one guy flops down beside her on a blanket, and yes. I'm like, who the hell is this guy?
Yes.
Where does he come from? Why do I care? Is this some guy that wants to ask her out? No.
He picked him first for that competition day they had at school to set up that arc that he's like, oh, I like this guy. I'm going to pick him first, even though he's not athletic.
And I also thought the other thing weird was the Halloween party. Was that needed? That whole 20 minutes there? Set up nothing other than to make the best friend and his girlfriend hate each other more. Well, we knew that already going into that scene.
Well, I love it. She walks in and it's Marco on stage singing. Oh, he's a singer now? He's got a band? I know we ran into him in the mall. Yes. Busking.
No, we ran into him first busking. So we already knew he was a singer. Now he's singing for this band.
The whole movie comes across as like a Disney Channel exclusive to set up the next whatever those brothers were.
Jonas?
Jonas Brothers. You know, and they used to all have their own movies and stuff on Disney.
Camp Rock. Disney Channel movies are much better than this, though.
Yeah. But it's like Netflix setting up its own Disney Channel movies.
There's a third one coming in 2021.
What?
Oh, awesome.
Of this?
Yeah, and it picks up from the ending of, oh, no, I got accepted to Harvard and Berkeley. First world problems free.
Okay.
Turns out she was also accepted to Oxford. So...
I have good news for you guys. I did ask my 13-year-old daughter a question. Who's hotter? And not the her boyfriend, Elle's boyfriend, or Marco? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me like I was dumb. Dad, Marco, come on. So, according to her, Elle made the wrong choice.
Well, wasn't there a 5-minute scene of her saying, you know, he could be the bun in my sandwich or whatever the hell.
Yeah, when...
And on and on and on.
On the PA system, and a random girl is like, who we've never seen before, goes her on.
Yeah. For a reason, yeah.
Like, oh, tell me more. I love to.
Oh, there was another 5 minutes I could have done without. That scene should have been over and under 3. But they extended that to almost 8 minutes.
The movie should be 80 minutes tops.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. There's no reason this film is 2 hours. So is the next one going to be a 3-hour extravaganza?
4 hours.
It's going to be the Irishman of kissing booth movies.
Kevin can't wait.
We're going to go back in time. We're going to age and de-age people.
And it's going to be a 30-minute recap of the first two films before the third film.
I hear they're going through quantum realm to go back in time to stop the original kissing booth from happening.
I would like to join that mission. I'll risk my life for that.
Yeah.
I think Doug's already got his time machine warming up now, guys. Okay.
Did you? I assume you watched the first one, eh, Doug?
No, I did not. So
I
had no brothers until Kevin mentioned it.
Yeah, for brothers, they have no interaction.
Yeah, the whole premise of the first film is that she's best friends with Joe Courtney, and he has made a rule that she'll never date his older brother. And then she's like, you know what? Screw off. I'm going to date him. And then that's the whole
conversation. He's hot, and I'm cute, therefore he's mine. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, she's not.
I do like Joy King, but I hate the character.
Nobody has the movie I want.
Hey, if it's on video, Blockbuster probably has it. I mean, we have over 10,000 videos.
I know you guys hate these movies. I don't really care anymore. We're going to do them all. So every time I have a list, expect two of them. So our first one is a Tony... I don't know how to say this.
It's a Byra, Horror of the Deep. Godzilla.
So... I guess only me and Doug probably watched this, knowing Kevin skipped it, and I think Daniel skipped it. Passed on both.
Yes.
So it's just fine. So I love these movies, Doug, and I think you share the same fondness as I did.
Absolutely.
And I thought this one wasn't bad. I thought it had a nice storyline in it. I thought it made sense, the storyline. But I thought it was weird when they get on this guy's boat and kind of kidnap him.
Yeah, yeah. I mostly go for the monsters in these movies, and this one was just a giant lobster.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, it's not my favorite monster, I'll say that.
Oh, I agree, but I mean, they get on this guy's boat, the fat guy eats all his food. They pretty much show that, and then I feel bad they get shipwrecked, so they break the guy's boat, looking for this guy's brother. I'm like, doesn't make any sense, but okay, I'll let it go.
They get trapped on Mothra's Island, and
yeah,
there's bad guys there.
This is my favorite part, is when they do the homage to the beach part movies, and they do the beach dancing, like in the beach movies, I was dying.
Yes.
I'm like, really? And what were those guys doing on the island? Mining something. I never think I quite understood what they were mining.
I know they had something that could control the monsters. Was that what they were mining?
I don't know, because the natives were giving them this yellow concoction.
Right.
And then the guy convinced them to give them banana peels or something. I really didn't get that, the translation.
I'm getting this one and the other movie, the other Godzilla movie that we watched, confused, but with this one, with hard water for nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction, or am I thinking of the other movie?
No, you're right on that one. So I think my favorite scene in this film is when Godzilla finally meets the lobster, and they start throwing the rock against each other. I was dying. I'm like, this is classic Godzilla movie.
Yes. I just can't get scared of a giant lobster, though.
There was nothing to be scared of, that giant lobster. Like I said in my review on Twitter, I think this movie is fun. If you're a Godzilla fan, you will like it. It's got a lot of Godzilla in it, and a lot of battling, and a lot of Godzilla stepping on miniatures constantly, which is always amusing to me, because those tanks always look bad. I mean, Godzilla obviously saves the day, and the monsters all swim off at the end. Have I left anything out?
No. Mothra shows up.
Oh, the Mothra scene is hysterical. So, Mothra coming down because the fairies called them, just get into the basket. And they all had to make baskets to get on. Like, this is great. I still can't figure out Mothra. He's a primitive god that the fairies can pray to. Somehow.
Yeah, constantly gets reborn in the larva that evolved to Mothra. So even if one Mothra dies, one will be there to take its place.
I think Dan needs this for like a pop, what do you call those, pizza pocket gods? You know, he just opens the microwave and there's a pizza pocket already heated for him. I think that's what kind of god Dan needs lately.
I'd pray to that god.
So let's
move. For Kraft dinner.
Oh god, no Kraft dinner ever in my life. Please do not make. I'll eat most junk, but I cannot eat KD. Sorry, cannot do
okay.
it.
Okay. I like the little cups.
What are little cups?
There's like little single cups. You put in the microwave for like 3 minutes.
If you say so.
Are you moving on to Invasion of the Astro?
I am, but I'm shocked at the KD 3 minute thing.
Could I just say real quick that it's starring a guy called Nick Adams, but for Japanese audiences, he's known as Niku Adamzu.
Niku Adamzu! Number one fan!
Niku Adamzu. Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
Doug, do you want to start?
Sure. This is where movies start to get real weird, with aliens coming and offering the cure for cancer. It's pretty amazing that aliens offer humanity the cure for cancer if they would just give them Rodan and Godzilla.
Yeah.
But actually these aliens are nefarious and actually want to take over the Earth by using Rodan, Godzilla, and Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. And it's just amazing. I love it. Big monster brawls, crazy alien conspiracies. It's fun.
Yeah, I think this one of the two movies we watched has a better storyline.
Yes.
It actually makes sense. They go to the different, they go to the Planet X, is it? I can't remember. And they talk to them. I thought it worked out. I thought it got a little, what is it? What's the one? The Sean Connery one when he steals, he's on the moon place in James Bond. I thought they pulled that right. Either Godzilla came out
Moonraker.
First. Not Moonraker, it's the other guy, Sean Connery.
Thunderball.
Could be Thunderball. And he's driving around the thing.
Oh,
like,
Thunderball.
I go, this is Thunderball. Either Thunderball ripped off this or they ripped off Thunderball because it's the same film. My biggest issue with this is the 5-minute monster battle at the end. That's it. Literally, it's 5 minutes. I'm like, come on, guys. I don't care about the storyline. Let's have some more killing. You got Ghidra blowing things up, and then they're like, oh, I know what to do. We can free them up this way. And then the movie's over. I thought this was disappointing. I really wish this one was a little bit better. Better storyline, better acting for sure. But really, they don't do anything. And then at the end of the film, they're going to send them as ambassadors to Planet X? What's up with that? No, you can't spend time with the cute girl from Planet X. No, no, you're becoming an ambassador.
It's just crazy movies, and I love them.
Oh, so
I don't
do
care about I just love them.
How many more left on your box set, Doug? We still have 12 more?
I think so, but only one of them has a smog monster, and that is my absolute favorite.
Well,
how many are there?
I think there's 15 total.
Okay.
So we only have three left, though, because we've already done that. This is number 12. I don't know. I just keep adding two because I love these films, and some of these I've never seen. So I guess we're finally moving on to a club that we might want to go to at some point if you lived in the 1920s.
Cotton Club, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Or Coppola, I don't know. Starring Richard Gere, Gregory Hines, Diane Lane, Lynette McKee, Bob Hoskins, James Remar, Nicolas Cage, and Fred Gwynne.
It's been a long time since I've seen this. I remember liking it. The music's great. The visuals are fantastic. Gregory Hines is particularly good, I thought, in this. But yeah, so beyond that, I don't remember too much.
I'm not big on gangsters, so I found this average in a lot of ways, so this is just kind of a slog for me. I really like three scenes, the one when the Williams brothers reunite and do the tap dancing bit and then the hug. Like, that was like, okay, this is the only kind of, like, emotionally connected. And then I like the whole bit with Nicolas Cage and the baby killer. I liked when Fred Gwynne's character, like, is a really tall guy, he gets released by Frenchie. He gets released, and then he smashes the Bob Hoskins watch because he thinks he only paid $500 to get him out. So I thought that was great. I liked some of the character moments, and Bob Hoskins was great. I liked race relations as well here, and that was interesting that they're giving their art, but they're not allowed to actually come in. The black people actually are not allowed to come in and watch their art. So that was interesting. But I didn't really care about Richard Gere. I didn't really care that much about their Gere's and Diane Lane's relationship. Like seeing Lawrence Fishburne and Tom Waits, though, they were cool as hell. Like, some of this movie is cool as hell, but as a whole, I didn't really care for it.
Yeah, this is definitely not The Godfather, Kamala. I actually kind of wanted, I was more interested in the story about, like, the performers as opposed to the gangsters. Like Kevin said, the music is fantastic, and that's what drew me into this story. I've seen Coppola do gangster stuff. He's amazing at it, but I like the music. I kind of wanted more of a, I was hoping for more of a Clint Eastwood vibe. Now I'm going to forget the name of the movie he did with Forrest Whitaker. All right, somebody else talk. I'll look it up.
Okay. I got to agree with Kevin. I can see why Kevin's memories are exactly that. He's rhymed off the best scenes of the film are always the arch scenes with the performer. They blow the film away. The gangster stuff is mundane. It's not interesting. I find it very convoluting at times. I really think they just show you the highlights. They don't really show you why they're doing things and stuff like that. I find that annoying. I don't find they have really depth. They're just gangsters doing gangster stuff. I don't care. The interesting stuff is the race relations. And I really think Richard Gere could be pulled out of this film and dropped, and the film would be 100 times better, other than they could introduce him, hey, this guy was in the movies, and have him play something and just leave him out. I would be okay with that. I don't think the Diane Lane or Richard Gere scene is needed at all. And then we can get rid of the Nicolas Cage scenes, which we don't really need, because they don't really help as much. We know Nicolas Cage is a bad guy. We've explained that to us. And then he kills that kid, and then we say, oh, he's really bad now? I didn't care at that point. I just found him boring. I have to agree with the Dan, that taxi number is the star of this film. I mean, I would encourage people just to watch that scene on YouTube and not watch this film. Because I really don't think you're going to remember it after you saw this. I just put it on my list because it's just one of these 80s films I haven't seen. And which is kind of weird, me not seeing an 80s film, because I do try to watch everything. I think the Cotton Club is just really bad Coppola. I think all his hits have been shot by this, and this is probably his last chance at it. And it's just, meh, it's okay. It's watchable, kind of. Doug, your film for Clint Eastwood and Forrest?
It was Bird, the Charlie Burr movie.
I've never seen it. Anything else on Cotton Club before we go to our last film? Okay. It is near dark at my house. Actually, more like pitch black, but go ahead, Dan.
Near dark.
Movie, I didn't watch that this week.
Uh-oh.
You didn't watch it?
No, the pitch black Vin Diesel movie.
Oh, very, very, very smart, Doug. It went over my head.
I think it went through my head.
Near Dark, directed by Catherine Bigelow, starring Adrian Pasdar, Jenny Wright, Lance Henriksen, Bill Paxton, Jeanette Goldstein, Tim Thomerson, and Joshua John Miller. I haven't started with the movie today, so I will, if you don't mind, I'll take away with Near Dark. This is what Bigelow's second film, and we did The Loveless last episode, and I think everything I didn't really like about The Loveless, she took all the good aspects of the world building and the drifter style, and she brought them to New Dark, and bringing in that to kind of like horror, I love that aspect, and I love the vampire like mythology brought into it. Just the aspect of their allegiances and how, where it went in the third act, because I always liked the film, but I loved it because of the third act. And Bill Paxton is great. Like, everyone, all the vampires are great, and just everything. I love the atmosphere of this movie, and I think one great thing about it is the kid who plays Homer, just how he can convincingly play that he's old as hell, even though he's in a kid's body. And then when he sees Sarah at the vending machine, he's like, oh, why are you out here alone? How he can convincingly be a kid. I thought that was great. Great movie. Thanks. I haven't seen it, so thanks for putting this on, son.
It's been on my list to watch forever. It's just one of those films I hear come up on lists. You need to watch this. You need to watch this. I really like the way she does her action scenes. I like them in Loveless. I like them even more here. She can world build like nobody else I've seen in a long time. Like that scene when they're getting shot up by the sheriffs. And I thought that was, and they bring the van. I'm like, that was brilliant. The way she shot that scene from the back and then shot it from the front. I thought that was good. I thought the scene when the guy's running and burning with the blanket on him, beautiful. The depth shots he gets just when a guy's walking across a cornfield or field. She gets depth of field I don't see in other things. I find her characters all have depth. All have a backstory. She shoots at angles we don't see. I think new filmmakers should watch these films and learn something. And don't watch Kissing Booth films, because that's what I see a lot on Netflix. There's my biggest beef about Netflix. Kissing Booth fight. All shot the same. Bigelow should shoot Kissing Booth 3, and I bet we would enjoy it more.
Probably. Maybe. She wrote it too.
I just think she's such a gem of an actor, a director that gets no respect from people. I mean, we saw it with Loveless. I love Near Dark. I love Hurt Locker. The only film of hers I haven't liked is Detroit, and it's not her directing I don't like. I don't like the storyline.
Have you seen Strange Days?
I don't think so.
That's one you should maybe check out. That's Ralph Fiennes. It's a sort of an end-of-the-century science fiction movie directed and written by Kathryn Bigelow.
Hey, don't worry. On my next list, there's another Bigelow film coming. We're doing them all now.
I like the film. Again, I didn't rewatch it for the show, but this one came into my orbit because of Jim Cameron, who Catherine was dating at the time.
I thought they were married.
So you see a lot of the... Well, it says they were dating at the time. They may have gotten married after, but a lot of the Kits Henriksen, Bill Paxton, Jeanette Goldstein, who's in it. A lot of these are faces we see a lot in films like Aliens and Terminator and Terminator 2 and other roles. I mean, so there's definitely that influence. And at the time, this was sort of pitched as, if you liked The Terminator, you should watch Near Dark. Adrian Pastar, I'm reviewing the cast. I'm shocked because I never would have made the connection of him and Heroes. That actor who was, you know, on Heroes, he was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. I didn't realize this was one of his... Yeah, he was one of the brothers on Heroes. So there was the older brother who was more of a conservative business guy and the young brother, and I can't remember their names.
He's the son who were on Heroes.
Yeah. Holy crap. Okay, I did not connect that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I love Heroes.
Anyway, it's a good, solid vampire film with some very inventive twists on the genre. Not just a beautiful film to look at, but also well-written and well-acted. So, all around, worth checking out.
The one thing I didn't care for about in the movie was the cure for vampirism was just a blood transfusion.
Yeah.
That was my one gripe with the movie, but, I mean, the visuals just... Bill Paxton just burned, but still walking around. That the visuals of this movie just take the cake. I mean, it's amazing.
I do want to touch on one scene before we wrap up. I think that bar scene is so well shot. When they get in the fight in the bar, and the guy shotguns the lead guy that just became a vampire. He goes, "How did that feel?" And Bill Paxton just takes over and wipes them all out. I'm like, you just don't see this filmmaking, I think, from everybody. Or this script writing. Like, they actually rely on, I hate to say this, character development people. Which is nice to see in films.
If you want a good laugh, take a look at the last release's Blu-ray cover for this movie. It came out at the height of Twilight. So they're making this movie look like a Twilight film.
Oh, God.
It's hysterical.
God. Okay, we got a few guys ready for some trivia. I'm not in the basement, so I don't have my trivia cards, but I did pull up some trivia for you guys for some fun.
Okay.
Okay, what are the names of the stuffed sisters from Disney's Cinderella? Anastasia and Drizella. Which six films are the only horror films ever to compete for an Oscar?
Is Jaws included as one of the six?
Incorrect. Nope. Jaws is one. Oh, yes. Jaws is on here. Yes. Jaws is one.
Sons of the Lambs?
Two.
Rosemary's Baby?
Exorcist is three. Rosemary's Baby was not nominated.
Carrie
was not nominated.
Psycho?
Nope. No. I'll give them to you. Sixth Sense, Black Swan, and Get Out. Who was the first African American to win an Oscar Academy Award for Best Actor?
Sidney Poitier.
Okay, I'll try to find some other ones which are really quick.
For Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Oh, okay. Wait before Denzel.
Do you not? You don't have the answer, Andy?
What?
Who won it?
Oh, Sidney Poitier. You were right.
Oh, okay.
What popular Disney character makes an appearance as a stuffed animal in the film Frozen?
Woody? Oh, Nemo. Neither? Okay.
Mickey.
You're correct. Okay, just for Kevin and Doug, or maybe Dan, approximately how many languages can C-3PO speak in Star Wars?
That's how many.
Oh, man. 6 billion forms of communication?
You are correct, Kevin. In Rogue One, what is the Empire removing from the holy city of Jeddah?
Kyber crystals.
What is the name of the Jack Nicholson character played in the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Oh, fuck.
Jack.
Come on, guys. I remember my English teacher would go on about RPM all day. Randall Patrick McMurphy.
So you guys going to watch the sequel series on that's coming up with Nurse Cratchit?
I probably will.
Oh, with Sarah Paulson?
Too much like American Horror Story and not enough Goose Nest.
Okay, last question before we get out of here. Who was the first actress ever to win an Academy Award?
Shirley Temple.
Incorrect. She didn't appear until about 6 years after, I think.
No, oh, okay.
Janet Gaynor. So, if they make it...
Hey, did anybody buy anything?
Oh, sorry. You are correct, Kevin. I bought nothing. You did.
You didn't buy anything? I'm shocked.
I know. I've been busy.
I bought Chinatown and the Two Jakes. I bought The Graduate and the Rocky. Road to Perdition. Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck.
Galaxy Quest.
Giant Pancake Seeds.
And Happy Happy Joy Joy, the Ren and Stimpy Story documentary.
Which I'm sure would be amazing because I love Ren and Stimpy.
We're going to review that at some point.
I'm sure that's coming up. Douglas?
I have way too many that I'm not prepared for right now. I took well advantage of the Criterion 50% off sale at Barnes & Noble.
Nice. That's good to hear. And Mr. Prynn?
I did not buy anything.
You weren't allowed out of the house this week?
I went to the Canadian Tire to get a shaver after I got my hair cut.
Mr. Prynn bought a shaver. Okay. If they make it...
We buy it.
We watch it. We review it.
We do everything.
We wrap it in flour.
Good night.